Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, Matt Chat. This is the show where we debate topics thrown to us. Buy our $20 patrons, $20 up a month, and you can get your face on this show. Patreon.com/Steven Larson. Go ahead with your first debate topic.
No, we're on this set right now. The Matt Chat set has not been made yet.
This is Matt Chat.
There's no Matt Chat graphics. Therefore, we can't officially name it Matt Chat.
It's Matt Chat.
We can unofficially, casually call it Matt Chat.
Listen, dude, this is our channel. We can do whatever we want to do. We can do. We have the ability to do that.
I understand that, but with that, we need the.
How do you know there are no Matt Chat graphics yet? I can send you graphics.
You're supposed to do that last week.
Cooper STD font.
I know the font.
Yeah,
but we need the set with the curtains and the chairs. We need all that.
Well, even more reason to go to patreon.com/Steven Larson and support the show, Matt Chat. Anyways, we're also Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com/. Going In Raw. Lots of great designs. Buy them all. This is Matt Chat. This is where the patrons send in videos, and then we debate those topics. First on the agenda, Larson.
Glorious S Ball. See what S Ball has to say.
Friendos, it's me, the glorious S Ball, all the way from the good old UK. Today, I've got a very simple debate topic for you. Now that Roman Reigns is back with his brothers, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, and formed the Shield, finally, they're together at last. But do you think this will get him over with the crowd in time for next year's WrestleMania, when he goes one-on-one with the Beast, Brock Lesnar? I personally think this might actually work. But what do you think, friendos? Thank you for your time and enjoy debating.
Thank you.
Thank you, glorious S-Ball. Will the Shield reunion get Roman in time over for WrestleMania 34? Matt Chat.
So the rumored match for WrestleMania 34 is Roman versus Brock Lesnar. Roman going over, finally getting his win over Brock. The third attempt at a coronation for Roman Reigns as top guy in the company.
Yeah.
Is this Shield reunion going to get the job done finally, getting him over with the fans? Steve, do you
want
to go first?
Yes, it is. Of course it is. Absolutely. Look at how the people are responding to him already. Absolutely, and there's no reason why they can't make this last all the way through WrestleMania season. It's like taking a little, you know, you have your baby, you put your baby in the little tiny boat, and then you push him along the stream, and then it just goes out into the river to go and start its life. Is that how parenthood works?
I don't know.
You put a baby in a boat? What are you talking about? Yes, of course it'll. Of course it will. What are you doing?
I'm writing notes.
Stop writing notes while I can see them.
Let's try to distract you.
I know. It's so annoying. This is Matt Chat. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, dude, look at how the audience already has responded to Seth and Dean being by Roman's side. This was an expertly executed move. Excellence of execution on the part of Vince McMahon.
You don't believe that.
I absolutely do believe that. This is one of the few things they've done correctly. Look, we've bitched and moaned time and time again about no long-term plan for getting Roman over by WrestleMania 34. We are witnessing it as we speak. As we watch Raw, we see this long-term plan coming to fruition. By the time we get to WrestleMania, people will expect the F5 to be this crazy finisher that nobody can kick out of. One F5 does the trick, and Roman's going to kick out of that at WrestleMania. It's going to make everybody gasp. That is in play right now. That is a long-term plan. Teaming, getting the Shield back together, absolutely will get Roman over by the time they hit WrestleMania 34. Already, people used to have this Pavlovian response to Roman Reigns' music, and they go, boo. As soon as even there was a hint of the Shield getting back together, people reverted to thinking of that music as the Shield's music. They're going to come down through the crowd, and maybe they're going to do some mashup. I know a couple of you on Twitter sent me mashups of the Shield and Dean Ambrose and Roman's and Seth's music all together. I don't want all that. I literally want all three songs to start at the same exact time and see what it sounds like. That's what I want.
I can tell you what it's going to sound like.
It's a mess. Yeah, totally a mess.
Hot mess.
But luckily, they're not going to take that suggestion. Absolutely, by the time he hits WrestleMania 34, he will be over thanks to The Shield. This has already been a wild success, and we've only seen the start of it. And there's only 5 months to WrestleMania, and boom.
All right, here's the thing, Steve.
Boom is yes.
There's actually two questions we need to pose to ourselves. One,
why is Steve right?
Will Roman get over in time for WrestleMania 34? And I think the larger question, probably the most important question, is if that happens, will Roman be able to sustain that past WrestleMania 34?
What does that matter?
I think that's really the most important thing.
That's not the question, though.
Let me finish.
Once again, you're going around the actual question.
No, I'm not. Let me finish.
In time for
the only way it would be, it's possible for this Shield reunion to work in Roman's benefit, leading into WrestleMania 34, is if the Shield stays together through WrestleMania 34. They have to stay together the entire time. I've been reading rumors on the internet that this reunion is only supposed to last through the end of the year. And if that happens, as soon as this reunion's over and Roman doesn't win the belt, as soon as this reunion is over, assuming that happens before WrestleMania 34, Roman's going to be back in the same exact position. They have tried everything Shield-related up to date to get Roman over. Gave him the Shield's music. Gave him his Shield gear. It's true. And all of that was done in an effort to get him over because of nostalgia. People love the Shield. If Roman's stealing Shield stuff, his song is Shield's song. People will love him because of Shield. That's the logic behind it. Am I wrong? No, I'm not. I'm 100% correct.
You are wrong.
I am not wrong. You're trying to tell me they didn't let Roman keep his ring gear and keep the Shield song to get him over because the Shield was so over? That's science. That is a fact.
Yeah, but you said they've done everything Shield related. Yeah, they haven't paired him back with the Shield. They haven't kept the Shield together.
They've done everything except that until now. Second, you mentioned.
Well, let me ask something real quick.
I'm still talking
just
here.
Just as an aside. Oh no, I'm not counterpointing you right now. I'll rebut you in a second when you're done with your ridiculous.
No, it's good stuff.
Argument. Do you think that keeping the Shield gear on him and the music on him? Take yourself out of kayfabe for a second. It seems like it was more of a lazy thing than...
Oh, no. I think it was definitely because
you think it was
this is
to
the guy...
Try to keep... Okay, yeah. All right. That's fine.
Second, you mentioned long-term planning. And yes, the Brock-Roman match seems to have been in the works even maybe before WrestleMania last year. Everything else about this is on the fly. From what I understand, Seth did an interview, I believe, on the Sam Roberts podcast where he was talking about his reunion with Dean. Mm-hmm. And Seth was under the impression that his feud with Bray was going to last much longer than it did. Instead, they said, nah, we're going to put you with Dean now. There's no long-term planning. The only long-term plan is a match at WrestleMania. Mm. The story leading up to it is completely up to Vince's whims.
Mm.
Third, here's another thing. And I mentioned this earlier. If they keep the Shield together through WrestleMania 34, it might work. People love nostalgia. It's a hell of a drug. I say it all the time.
Yeah, you're going to that well a lot these
people
days,
people love... me make a shirt that says that. I'm 100% sure I made up that phrase. I should do a Google search just to make sure. Regardless, if they put the brakes in this reunion before WrestleMania, Roman's going to be back to square one, back to where he was before the reunion. But I think it is a very important detail, a very important aspect of it. If he can get over, with the Shield's help, if, even through WrestleMania 34, if he can maintain that by himself after WrestleMania 34. Because if he can't, even if the Shield helped him get him over, it's all going to be for naught. Ultimately.
Okay. Well, I think that they're going to see how wildly successful this is. They're going to keep it going all the way till WrestleMania 34, maybe even past WrestleMania 34, all the way to SummerSlam, where they will have a Shield triple threat.
Why would they have a match when they're reunited?
I mean, like the idea of the Shield being in something together. I mean, by the time Money in the Bank comes around, they're going to start breaking them up in some manner.
Okay.
Because Roman will have that
universal
title.
But once Roman's back to being strictly a solo competitor, mm-hmm. not a part of the Shield, I don't think anything's going to change.
Nah, people still love him, dude.
Well, some people still love him. Some people still boo him.
Nah, everybody's going to love
him. He's going to be the least popular member of the Shield by the time this is all over still.
He's always been the least popular.
Yeah, I know.
But that's
not going to change.
That's like saying George Harrison's the third most popular member of the Beatles.
You just compared Roman Reigns to George Harrison?
Yes, I did.
All right.
Yes, I did. Because sometimes when George Harrison, when his music played, half the people booed and half the people cheered. Publish.
Are you sure about that?
No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
Talking on my ass right now. All right.
Next question.
Thank
next
you,
topic.
Thank you very much, S-Ball.
Yes, thank you very much.
Next up, we've got, Charvel. I find it funny, Myers. Let's see what he has to say.
What it do, friendos? It's your boy, Charvel. I find it funny, Myers. Yeah, on my break. Tell Lacey, Steve, tell Lacey I know about that postal life. Just going to go ahead and throw it out there. But anyway, I've been always thinking, and I'm going to give this for both of y'all. So, Steve, what I want you to do is I want you to be Triple H. And I want you to give all the reasons why the WWE needs to bring in Kenny Omega and why he would be pushed to the top and how you would push him to the top. And Larson, you would be Vince. So you kind of probably want to bring back CM Punk. So y'all debate on how you would bring each of those superstars to the WWE. But if you bring one, you can't bring the other later on down in time. And how you would push them to the top. That's all I got, friendos. Botch too sweet. Holla at y'all later.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. Lacey will appreciate your shout out to the post office. So in this case, I'm not going to do this entirely in Triple H's voice. But he's putting me in the shoes of the game, Triple H. I want to bring Dad, I want to bring in this kid named Kenny Omega. He's really good in New Japan.
Why would you want to bring in Kenny Omega? We have a perfectly known commodity over here at CM Punk.
Yeah, but Dad, you're suing the pants off of CM Punk.
You're the one with the beef.
Oh, that's right. I hate that guy. All right. So
no, I'm going first.
All right, you go ahead.
I think I pretty much summed it up in my poor Vince impersonation. CM Punk is a known commodity.
True.
He is beloved by the WWE Universe. In the years since his departure from WWE and subsequent firing, he has made a splash in the mainstream culture. He has written comic books. He got his butt handed to him in the UFC cage. He was on Talking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
He was on Mark Maron's show, too.
Mm.
He's done a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. He's, despite his failures in the octagon, I think he's brought additional notoriety to himself and additional star power. Bring him back to the WWE. People still love CM Punk. They still chant his name every goddamn Raw and SmackDown to irritate the crap out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, people love CM Punk. They want him back. Not to say people don't like or love Kenny Omega. I like Kenny Omega. I think he's great. I think he's fantastic. I think he could be a huge star in WWE. But we do know that CM Punk was and can be a huge star. CM Punk and WWE is a license to print money. That is a guarantee. That is a fact. We don't know that about Kenny Omega. They could bring him in with high hopes for him and botch his run completely and never make a cent off him. That's entirely possible. CM Punk, on the other hand, guarantee to make money.
All right, let me ask you something, Dad. Have you gone to Hot Topic anytime lately? Do rich people go to Hot Topic?
No. I don't think they go to the mall.
All right. Well, listen up. You know how many shirts Bullet Club has sold at Hot Topic?
Quite a few.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Who's the leader of Bullet Club? Kenny.
Kenny Omega.
The Cleaner Omega. You talk about a license to print money. You think Kenny the Cleaner Omega isn't a license to print money?
Well, Bullet Club shirts are a license to print
money. We know what CM Punk's ceiling is in the WWE. We saw it before.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest champions in the history of the company.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he couldn't take on The Rock, and he couldn't take on Cena in WrestleMania. And so, no, his ceiling. And on top of that, how old is CM Punk?
I'm like my age.
He's super old.
Well,
exactly.
Thanks.
Super old. I'm only a year younger than you.
You're
I'm
super old,
super
too.
Old, too. I'm totally willing to admit that. Nobody wants to see these guys wrestle in WrestleMania.
But I'm not
Nobody's
going to
want to watch
CM either.
Punk wrestle at WrestleMania either.
Not true.
Kenny Omega is the future. And what we're going to do is make a dollar and a cent off of this kid, Kenny Omega, who will then also be able to smooth things out with the Young Bucks, who we've been ceasing and desisting on. It's too sweet. Hey, Young Bucks, you want it too sweet some more? How about come over to the WWE? We'll let you too sweet all you want. We just want some of that merchandise money. Kenny Omega is the future, and that's why we're going to sign him to the WWE in a massive contract debut with the Royal Rumble. He's going to win, then go on to win the Universal title at WrestleMania 35. That's what's going to happen because CM Punk will never sign with the WWE. You know why? Because we suit his pants off, and he's a man who's too prideful. Never going to come back. Kenny Omega.
The nature of his beef is with Triple H more so, I believe. He does not like Triple H.
I don't want him to be here.
And I don't think Triple H likes him either.
Well, that's also the problem, is that actually, if you even take the lawsuit out of it, you bring CM Punk back, Triple H isn't like Vince. I don't think Triple H is like Vince McMahon. I don't think Vince McMahon, he's got a massive ego. But his ego.
If he thinks he can make a dollar off something, some money off of a program, it doesn't matter. Yeah. He'll do it.
Exactly.
He'll put whatever problems existed in the past aside. Yeah. I don't know if Triple H operates the same way or not.
Now, if we drop the pretense of this being a debate, I do think that CM Punk would absolutely pop ratings higher than Kenny Omega.
Uh-huh.
However, I think Kenny Omega would be a fantastic investment for their future.
Yeah, he would be.
Because, I mean, CM Punk is already, how old is CM Punk? He's like, all right,
like 39 or something.
He's like 39, yeah. I mean, Kenny's not that
much 31.
He's only 31?
I think so.
I thought he was 34 by now.
Oh, maybe he is.
Holy
but
crap.
He's taking, I mean, not to say Punk hasn't, but Kenny Omega's already got a lot of tread on those, or doesn't, you know, he's already taken quite a beating.
Yeah, that's true. But like I said, we already signed. And then also another thing is, here's the thing. If you bring CM Punk, he's going to, we talked about this before. If you bring him back, he's going to have to be a part-timer because he's so old.
Oh, yeah. And that kind of runs contrary to his whole idea about leaving.
He was born in 19. He's 33. Okay.
Okay.
So he's 33. He still has a lot of years left.
Kenny will have to simplify his style.
You bring in Kenny. Then you pave the road for names like Kota Ibushi.
Mm-hmm.
You pave the road for the Young Bucks. Marty Scurll. Bring back Cody Rhodes, even though I don't think anyone will see that. Hangman Page.
So you'll bring in the Bullet Club, but you won't call them Bullet Club. What will you call them? Club?
Yeah, probably just the Club.
The Club.
Call them the Club. Yeah. Tama Tonga, he does the thing. I don't have the music playing right now.
No, we don't.
All right, next up. Who we got next on the docket?
From JT Hosack.
JT Hosack. Let's see what he says.
Hey, what's up, friendos? This is JT the Professor Hosack. That's right. It's Hosack. Ho and sack. You say it just like it's spelled. Embarrassing sometimes, but you got to own it. So I got to thinking. Enzo, he's been a pain in the butt. He's not great in the ring. I think we've proven that. I haven't seen too much in terms of growth. But what he is, he's pretty good on the mic when he's given, you know, this is the amount of time you have, don't go any further than that. And, you know, we've had a lot of GMs that have been great on the mic, except Head Cold McMahon. And overall, you know, I think Enzo as a GM could really boost ratings. I think it would kind of hit on his strengths, and it could add another layer to the booking and to the interest of 205 Live. I think it'd be really, really interesting. So that being said, for my first video submission for Matt Chat, Larson, I'd like you to argue that Enzo would be a horrible GM for 205 Live. And Steve, I'd like you to argue, just because I think it'd be great, I'd like you to argue that Enzo would be a great GM for 205 Live. And in either case, if he was ever made GM of 205 Live, what do you think his first actions would be? How would you book that going forward? Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys' podcast. You guys got me back into wrestling. The daily content is phenomenal. I hate hearing those podcasts that are always negative about wrestling. I wonder why you even watch it anymore. Makes me very sad. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it. All you friendos out there, you guys have a great week. I got to go teach some college students, so I'll see you soon. Bye.
Thank you, JT. I love this idea. I think it's fantastic. Why didn't I think about this? Enzo was GM. And tell you what, when the cameras weren't rolling, we heard your video, I said, I actually really like this idea. He said, it's a terrible idea. So this is actually a shoot debate right here. They don't know what to do with Enzo. They have him right now on 205 Live. He popped ratings for a week. They put the title on him. It was a joke. They got it off him using Kalisto. Who knows what they're going to do with him next? There's no long-term solution for what you do with Enzo Amore. You can't keep him on 205 Live because he can't wrestle a lick, and 205 Live is supposed to be the show where you wrestle. So what do? You turn him face, and then you make him GM. Because that way, you still get to sell, and he'd be like GM/player. Every once in a while, he'll wrestle. You sell that Enzo merchandise, which is what they love so much. You're still able to generate ratings with a face Enzo Amore there on 205 Live, because I kind of think one of the problems with the ratings thing is they went down because he turned heel immediately. So what do? You make him GM of 205 Live. Why not? Who cares? We haven't seen. I know Kurt Angle technically is supposed to be GM of 205 Live because he's the Raw GM, But why not give 205 Live their own GM? We haven't seen any authority figures on 205 Live. Why not an outside-of-the-box one like Enzo Amore? Would he talk a lot? Yes, he would talk a lot. However, you know, he already talks a lot right now. He takes up 13-minute intro segments to the show, so just have him come out. Right now, we're going to have a great match. All right, we're going to feature Grand Metalik and this schmuck Daivari in the ring. Enjoy. Go get some popcorn and buy my merch. And then he beats feet. I think Enzo's GM is a great idea. You go ahead.
No, please. I'll tell you why. Enzo already talks enough as is. And at certain times, I'm happy to see him wrestle because that means he won't be talking. If he's GM, that's all he'll be doing.
I feel like you were just
talking.
I feel like you're a stand-up comedian who just completely like flubbed a joke.
It wasn't meant to be a joke. That's
no,
point.
I know. We have no like studio audience
here. I know. He talks too much. I'm tired of him talking. I want to talk more. So at least when he wrestles, he doesn't talk.
Yeah, but he's on the TV still. I'd rather hear him talk because
I'm still doing my argument.
You paused. Because
I was collecting my thoughts, so give me a second.
All right, fine. I'm going to write that down then.
Gosh. Also, when's the last time a GM ever popped ratings or anything? Never. Doesn't happen. GMs don't pop anything.
That's not true.
Give me an example.
Kurt Angle.
Briefly.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, not long term. You don't watch a show because somebody's GM.
All right, keep on going then.
And he dropped the belt to Kalisto, but he's getting it right back at TLC. They seem intent on making Enzo one of the primary players on 205 Live. They still think, WWE that is, that he is one of the competitors that will help 205 Live, that will elevate the show, bring it up the network ratings. That's why segments with him have main evented Raw for 3 straight weeks. They're trying this out. Enzo as face of 205 Live, and they're going to ride it out until either it's an utter and abysmal failure.
It is already.
Or Vince. Well, I don't think it would be if Neville had stuck around. I think if the feud was Neville-Enzo, it would be really good.
The ratings were already dropping.
I know. But nonetheless, I think the chances for a rebound if the feud is Enzo-Neville is much more likely than Enzo-Kalisto.
Smarks like Neville, nobody else.
What?
I said smarks like Neville, nobody else.
Well.
All right, are you done? Because you're drinking
right
now.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Here's the thing. Yes. What do I like to hear him talk? Not necessarily, but it's the one thing he does good. He does not wrestle good, so I don't want him on my screen wrestling. So why not just have him in a role where he just does that? Be it manager or GM. But I like GM because you generally see GMs even less than managers. What's our big complaint about Kurt Angle? We never really see him. He shows up. He looks like he's got a big burden on his head, and or on his shoulders, rather. And then he goes away. You don't really see him a whole lot. So we wouldn't really see Enzo that much. He would just be the foundational sort of GM guy who people turn to when matches need to be booked and stuff. He'd be super over because we never have to see him wrestle, and he wouldn't be on TV that much.
He would be much better off as a manager.
Let me ask you something. Do you think the WWE is ever going to let him go?
No, but it's probably more likely that he would want to leave.
Yeah, he'd want to
leave. Because he could pursue other pursuits, like he wants to get into acting.
Right,
or music,
yeah. But the WWE is never going to want to let him go.
No, so long as he sells merch. If that day comes when he stops selling merch, then they'll let him go.
Yeah, I know. But on top of that, number one, I think that as a face, he is still really over with the crowd. And I don't see that. I honestly don't see that changing anytime soon. He's got that, like him or not, he has got more personality than most people on the roster.
Yeah.
That is a fact. And they're not going to want to get rid of a personality like that. So we're stuck with Enzo Amore. The question is, what do you do with him? Now, is it manager? Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a manager. But I think the fact that 205 Live, who can use Enzo Amore, can use him perfectly as a GM. I actually do believe that. I think it's a great idea. Next up, from the cat, Daryl Takahashi. Let's see what he has to say.
What's good, Stephen Larson? And many friendos out there. It's the cat, Daryl Takahashi. And my debate question for Matt Chat this week is, in terms of legacy, which country do you feel has a better wrestling legacy? Japan or Canada?
Thank you, Daryl Takahashi.
Oh, that is a deep question. Canada versus Japan, whose legacy is greater? You can go first.
Oh, it's Japan. It's Japan.
All right.
Canada has produced some noteworthy wrestlers, Hall of Famers, legends in their own rights. Canada's famous for the Hart family. You have Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn.
Why are you talking about Japan at all?
I'm getting to it. But in Japan, in many respects, they revolutionized the sport of pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
The advent of strong style. And you had stuff like that Minoru Suzuki was doing, where he was wrestling, where he wrestled, did MMA, went back to wrestling, merged the two styles. Some of the most legendary figures in the history of pro wrestling are Japanese. Inoki, Giant Baba.
I feel like this should be writing itself, and you're having a really difficult
time. I know, so I've been sick all week, and I've just been... I'm just remembering.
All you gotta say is New Japan Pro Wrestling.
It's I'm getting to it. I'm doing. I'm doing
we
background.
Don't need a history.
I'm doing background. I'm doing because it's not just who's popular now. It's the legacy. That's the entirety of it.
You can go from now and then go backwards. Come on, it writes itself. Come on, it's let's
new,
go.
Yes, there's New Japan. There's All Japan. Nowadays, there's Pro Wrestling Noah. The women's wrestling organization Japan are huge. You have Stardom. The breadth of wrestling available in Japan, the Japanese wrestling, the extent of the product, the matches, the styles. Mm-hmm. I mean, without what Onita was doing in Japan, would we have seen some of the hardcore wrestling in the States? I mean, that's where Mick Foley went. I mean, granted, I know he got the inspiration from that, from seeing stuff in the States, but he took it to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
So without Onita, would we have ECW or CZW or XPW? Who knows? that's really...
He said XPW.
XPW, I know. So, in my mind, just the level of talents that consistently produced by the Japanese promotions, the influence that the various styles of Japanese wrestling has had on wrestling in general, in my mind, just easily gives it the vastly superior legacy.
All right. That was a terrible argument. However, the actual answer is Japan. However, I'm going to argue for Canada right now.
Do it.
The real answer is Japan.
It is Japan.
Let me throw these names, Larson.
Bret Hart, okay.
Bret Hart. Chris Benoit.
Uh-huh.
Dean Malenko.
He's not Canadian.
No, he's not. What is he? Where is he from?
I think he's just from America.
All right. Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens.
Uh-huh.
Who did we just see? I just heard somebody say it. Lance Storm.
Sami Zayn.
Kenny Omega.
Uh-huh.
There's
a lot of great Canadian wrestlers, yes.
Who did I just say? Oh, Bobby Roode.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's many. Canada is a wrestling factory.
It is.
That's where they churn out these wrestlers. That's where that weird dungeon is that Stu Hart used to bend little kids left and right and make them tap out and stuff. Hey, you heard those tapes, same as I did. It was terrifying. What an awful thing to go through. Look, man, Canada is a wrestling factory.
Yeah.
They dole out legend after legend after legend. Bret the Hitman Hart, perhaps one of the best wrestlers of all time. Certainly one of the most charismatic wrestlers of all time.
Overrated.
Chris Benoit, legendary career, pillar of the community. Chris Jericho, author, book writer,
yeah.
Storyteller, gatekeeper,
yes.
Dreamweaver.
Rockstar.
Rockstar, exactly. We wouldn't have the musical stylings of Fozzie without Chris Jericho. Now, do they have their own wrestling promotion similar to the popularity of New Japan? No. What is it? What was their deal? What did they have?
It was Stampede.
Stampede wrestling.
That was Stu Hart's promotion for years.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Look, the real answer, to be honest with you, is it's Japan. Japan. I mean, the way their culture... I absolutely envy the Japanese culture in how they treat pro wrestling as if it's like, you know, like they don't have kayfabe, but they still respect the craft.
It's covered like any other sport.
Yeah, exactly.
It's covered like baseball.
Yeah, they appreciate performance over there. We can learn a lot from that.
Yeah.
All the best matches are from New Japan these days.
These days, yeah.
So,
but also, yeah. Like, Canada has produced a lot of great wrestlers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why it is. I mean, you know, maybe it's all because, you know, it snows a lot up there and they have to be inside a lot.
And wrestling warms them up. Is that where you're going with that?
Yeah, who's up next? Let's get out of this one. AO Worm has a question here.
Hey, what's going on, friendos? Ayo, Worm here, back with another debate topic. So, Steve, I want you to debate why WWE should let wrestlers wrestle their style. And, Lars, I want you to rebuttal and talk about why they should not wrestle their style. Thank you.
Thank you, Ayo, Worm.
Thank you. Well, good luck with this one, because the answer is totally yes. They totally should let them wrestle their style, unless their style is, like, extreme hardcore. Yeah, absolutely. I think we saw this in the Cruiserweight Classic. I'll make this one quick. You saw it in the Cruiserweight Classic, and now you see it on 205 Live. Why they WWE wrestlers should be allowed to wrestle the style that brought them to the dance in the first place. If they're scouted by Regal or Triple H or whomever, then there's a reason why they were signed to the WWE. And sometimes, yeah, it might be look or promo ability or ability to get over the crowd. But the bottom line is a lot of these guys get in now because of their fantastic wrestling ability. Look at guys like Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and the entire Cruiserweight division. Why they don't let these Cruiserweights wrestle the style that brought them to the dance and made them such stars in the Cruiserweight Classic is beyond me. So yes, they absolutely should let them wrestle their own way. You go ahead.
They should let them wrestle their style at major shows. Otherwise, no. Being on the road for 250 to 300 days a year, if you wrestle a physical, highly athletic, demanding style, you're going to get hurt. And that's not a quality investment on the WWE to invest time and money to promote and employ a wrestler who's going to be hurt all the time. They're not going to do that. So, yes, when you're wrestling 250 days a year, you need to pare things down a little bit. Save your high spots, your quality matches for the major shows. Yeah, WrestleMania, go for it. Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, yeah, go 100%, pedal to the metal. But when you're wrestling 3 to 4 house shows a week, you got to scale it back a little bit. You got to pull your punches. You got to take a couple flips out of your repertoire. You got to do that. Otherwise, you're going to cut your career short, and you're going to get hurt.
Oh, no.
Second, it's a crap argument, but I'm going to make it. WWE has got to where they are now for one reason, because they've employed the WWE style. They think it's a style that is most effective at telling stories on television. And if I don't agree with this, but if history is any indicator, it's a style that has worked because they're the largest, most profitable wrestling organization on the entire planet. It might not be the most enjoyable form of wrestling, but it has been, historically speaking, the most successful.
See, that was a brilliant argument. That was fantastic. I don't know what happened with the Japan one.
I overthought it.
No, yeah.
I should have went simple.
Well, Japan's too big. It's too much.
There's a lot to...
How do you boil it all down?
I know. There's a lot to wrap your head around.
No, that was a good argument. I like that. Well done. Next up, we have Jordan Carter. Let's see what Jordan has to say.
Hey, friendos. So I just got back from Tuesday's SmackDown Live. Hope you guys saw my sign. So my debate question for you this week. We saw Sami Zayn and we saw the Usos flirting with heel turns, face turns. So my question for you is, who had the best heel or face turn ever? Let me know. Thanks.
Thank you, Jordan.
Well, I'll go for... You went... I went first last time. You go first.
Okay, Stone Cold. Stone Cold's best face turn ever. Why? He had to say a word.
Which face turn? He did two of them.
Yeah. The double turn with him and Bret Hart.
Very good.
It was all storytelling in the ring.
Yeah.
It was all super effective. Oof. Not a word spoken. No promo. Didn't need it. He wouldn't tap out. That was it. That was the story. He wouldn't tap out. He wouldn't give up to Bret. Bret beat his butt all around that ring. Nonetheless, he would not tap out. That face turn led to the most profitable period in the history of WWE and launched its greatest star ever in terms of drawing power to huge success. Mainstream crossover appeal made Stone Cold the most massive star in wrestling history. He might not have been top star for as long as Hogan or Cena, but for those 5 years, no one topped Stone Cold. Stone Cold's face turn is the best face turn ever.
All right. So I had a decision to make here. Do I go with the Hogan heel turn, the NWO Hogan heel turn, or do I go with The Rock's heel turn at your favorite pay-per-view of all time, Survivor Series 1998? And in fact, I went with The Rock, and I'll tell you why. Because when Hogan went heel, it was out of... I'll say it, desperation. His career was basically dead.
Yeah, he wasn't relevant anymore.
He was able to politic his way to the top, keep that top spot. However, nobody in the crowds wanted to see him. By the time he even finished his run in WWF, that King of the Ring pay-per-view, 93, I think it was, you take a look, there's like not a lot of people there. Like, I think they drew like 5,000 people, something like that, which is a ridiculously low number for that time and for his peak even. By the time he had come back to the WCW doing the Hulkamania thing, God, nobody cared. Nobody cared. Then you bring in Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, who were like two of the coolest guys ever in wrestling, and he's even more irrelevant. Hogan was so blind to this that he wasn't even sure that he wanted to turn heel, because he just wanted to hold on to his legacy of being saying your prayers, eating your vitamins, and whatever the third
drinking
thing
your
was.
Milk.
Drinking milk, which for lactose intolerant people is probably a terrible idea.
Terrible idea for me.
Yeah. And so Hogan did this, I'm not going to say out of desperation, but it was against probably his better judgment. I think he's kind of said as such, and it just happened to work. They had a fantastic logo, and they had Hall and Nash, which are the two coolest guys. And then you bring Hogan in, and he's kind of this monster. But his heel turn was kind of out of desperation. The Rock, on the other hand, was already almost one of the biggest faces the WWF had in 1998. He was electrifying audience. He had already been a heel, and he started cutting those amazing promos. He was in the Nation. He kicked out Farouk, but people just loved him. They loved to hate him, and they just started to love him, and he became a face. In 1998, they could have run with him as co-top face in the company, along with Stone Cold, and had two massive, massive merchandise sellers. And what did they do? They pulled the trigger on a heel turn. Nobody needed to do it. They could have kept on running with that and made, I don't know, Triple H or somebody else top heel in the company. But they went with The Rock in what was a massive, amazing, intricately plotted storyline decision that rocked the wrestling world. And those fans were so, so furious.
Well, part of it, too, is that the finish of that match was straight from Survivor Series 97.
Yeah,
it's a screw job finish.
Exactly.
Which brought even more heat on
it. And the next night, Rock comes out and he says, "Do you really think I forgot when you people said, 'Die, Rocky, die.'" So it was perfectly motivated as well. I thought it was the perfect heel turn.
Yeah, it was good.
Two good answers, I think.
Yes, two very good answers.
Yeah.
Next, we're going to take two questions talking about factions. We're going to talk about factions more on Saturday, tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. We got
for episode of Countout.
Yeah, that's right.
First, from Robert Stack. Let's see what Robert has to say.
"Hey, friendos. It's the unsolved mystery Robert Stack. And don't mind the wrinkled collar. I'm a hard worker. Now, my debate topic for today is, who do you believe is the most influential faction of all time? Of course, you have the Four Horsemen, you have D-Generation X, you have something as recent as a Shield. Now, debate is not who was the better faction, but the most influential, who's had the most impact of either faction of all time. Happy debating, and stay cool, friendos."
Thank you, Robert.
I like Robert. He's got the collar there. Yeah. Hard-working man.
Yeah.
Looks like he should be on the Going In Raw daily set.
Yeah.
However, he wants to know what's the most influential faction of all time. I'm going to say the NWO. It was the NWO, because we talk about this on Countout tomorrow, and we go more in depth in it there. But the NWO ushered in the greatest era of success for both WCW and the WWF.
All you have to do is throw up a Too Sweet, and that's why they're most influential.
Too Sweet. They begot Bullet Club down the line. So they're selling Funko Pops at Hot Topic next year of Bullet Club. But, I mean, look, y'all know, you guys know NWO, all right? See, you threw me off by saying I'm already overthinking it. Don't drag me down to your level. I'm not overthinking this.
Everybody has bad days, man.
I'm not having a bad day. I'm having a great day.
No, I'm thinking myself.
The NWO, as you guys know, they ushered in the Attitude Era. If it wasn't for the NWO, WWF never would have ushered in the Attitude Era. They probably just would have lingered along the same crap path they were on in 1995 when you had guys like Bret Hart, you had Diesel. I'm not sure they ever would have pulled the trigger on a Stone Cold Steve Austin or given him the liberty to be as edgy as he was. They certainly wouldn't have come up with DX because they wouldn't have had any real competition. And that's what really spurred the WWF's revival in 1996, 97, 98 was competition from WCW. And what kicked that off? It was the NWO. All of a sudden, everything wrestling was cool again because the NWO celebrities were in NWO gear. Everybody was paying attention to it. They even had their own pay-per-view, which was a massive pile of crap.
Giant pile of garbage.
But it's absolutely, it's the NWO. You go ahead.
No, it's the Horsemen. Four Horsemen. I'll tell you why. They weren't the first heel faction, but they were one of the first to absolutely run roughshod over a company, promotions, territories. They had their own hand gesture. Without the Horsemen, you probably never would have had a lot of these other heel factions that eventually sprung up in their wake. You had Ric Flair at the peak of his powers in the mid-late 80s, dominating wrestling in the NWA, later on WCW. They were guys who, in many respects, just looked like normal dudes. But, man.
Everybody, all wrestlers in the early 80s did, though.
But they glamorized the sport with their jet-setting, limousine riding. And if you talk to a lot of wrestlers...
I like that you didn't even try to do the whole
thing. Oh, I'm not going to bother with it. Not today. I have a problem just talking. And if you hear or watch interviews with wrestlers, especially the wrestlers that are on the, you know, like top of the card now, ask them about their influences, the most common name you'll probably hear isn't Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. Probably isn't even Stone Cold. Mm-hmm. Generally, it's Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. Ric Flair seemed to be the wrestler's wrestler. And while the Horsemen may not have the mainstream crossover appeal the NWO achieved, in the wrestling business, it seems, I'm not in it, but as an observer, it seems to me that the Horsemen, and specifically Ric Flair, might have been one of the most, if not the most influential wrestlers in the history of the business, as far as other wrestlers. That's a laugh when I said observer, because as a wrestling observer, it made me chuckle.
You nerd. Hey, have you noticed, going back to your point about most wrestlers saying that Ric Flair was their inspiration, have you noticed that HBK is starting to creep up now that the younger guys are being asked that question?
I know.
It's everybody's HBK.
But it was with HBK, it was Ric Flair.
Yeah, no, it totally was.
Same with Triple H. That's his favorite. I think it's his favorite wrestler. And you have Arn Anderson, who and Tully Blanchard, who we see now... The Revival is pretty much doing a brain buster or Minnesota Wrecking Crew, and is Arn and Ole. That's kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Without the glamour, they're not wearing the fur coat during that riding around limousines, but in terms of their approach to wrestling, that's still the Horsemen influencing wrestlers today.
And quick side note, too, one of these two groups is actually number one on Countout tomorrow.
Yeah.
Find out who by watching. Next up from
Vincent Palmieri.
Vincent Palmieri. Let's see what he has to say.
Today, your debate topic is going to be, which was a superior faction, the Four Horsemen or Evolution?
Thank you, Vincent.
Thank you, Vincent.
So, who is the better faction, the Horsemen or Evolution?
Oh, I go first.
Yeah, you go first.
Horsemen may be most influential. Evolution was a better faction. You know why?
Why?
Well, to bolster my argument for the Horsemen being most influential.
Use our criteria.
Oh, hold on.
Okay.
Without Horsemen, you get no Evolution.
Literally.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
So, yeah, our criteria for any top thing is threefold.
Yeah.
Being good.
Impact.
Yeah. And kayfabe. When it comes to kayfabe, Evolution wins.
Yeah.
Because they had all the belts at one point, I think.
All the belts.
They won all the belts.
And then if you look at each individual member, they were all world champions at different times.
Yeah. Yes. Being good.
Mm-hmm.
Triple H, great.
Mm-hmm.
Ric Flair, one of the best.
Of all time.
Randy Orton, kind of boring at times, but he's decorated.
Yeah.
Batista.
When he's on.
Yeah, Batista, good wrestler, fantastic actor.
Oh, yeah, amazing.
So impact.
Huge impact
with Batista.
He's Drax.
Ric Flair crosses over to both.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's Evolution, man. Evolution, baby.
Well, I'm going to say it. Don't ever do that. I'm going to say it's Horsemen. Because they lived the lifestyle. Somehow, okay, so Randy Orton used to talk a lot about, like, I put it this way. Remember how they had all those, like, kind of borderline creepy video packages of Evolution partying with girls in, like, their limos and stuff? I think that was a show. I think they just filmed that stuff. That wasn't real. That wasn't verite. Well,
I think it was a show. It was probably a show for three quarters of
them. Yeah, I'm sorry. You're correct. But the Horsemen of the group... They lived that lifestyle. That's why the Horsemen are the better faction, because they lived that lifestyle. Who would you rather hear stories from about time on the road, off the record, in a bar while buying Ric Flair some drinks? The Horsemen or Evolution? It's totally the Horsemen. They probably engaged in so much debauchery.
He might have some good stories about trying to get some of the other guys to to do crazy stuff with him. That could be funny.
That could be, that could be true. But it's absolutely the Horsemen. But again, we've got a great episode of Count Out tomorrow, so we'll leave a little bit of that for Count Out. Last up, we've got Michael Berry, and he has a question for us.
What's going on, friendos? Just quick debate question. This one, hopefully a little more exciting. So what I want both of you to do is pick a movie, and the characters from the movies each of you pick are going to make a brand new wrestling promotion. So take your movie, take the characters, and defend why your promotion would be better than the others. Have a good one.
Thank you, Michael Berry.
All right, so we got to take characters from a movie.
And they start a wrestling promotion.
All right, who goes first? Or do I go first?
I think I do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Tyler Durden.
He kind of did start a wrestling promotion.
He started a fight club.
Yeah, true.
In the movie Fight Club.
Project Mayhem.
Project Mayhem. Yeah. Of course, the only demerit that I can think of, or the major demerit against him, is that he's not real.
Not a real person. Not real. Can't start anything.
He's a projection of Ed Norton's character, unnamed protagonist of the movie.
Yeah.
Also, he really appeals to meatheads,
mm-hmm.
who think he's like someone to look up to when he's a jerk.
Yeah, he's kind of a bro icon.
Yeah,
but he's a big piece of crap.
He is.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
But again, he'd be a wrestling promoter.
He would be a wrestling promoter, so it would fit.
Yeah,
and you know, he has experience working in underground fight leagues.
Mm-hmm.
So expand that. He can do some sort of
CZW,
exactly CZW or XPW type thing. That's hardcore, smaller venues,
mm-hmm.
a lot of fluorescent tubes. I'm guessing.
Yeah,
dangerous spots, major injuries,
mm-hmm.
And he would probably be fine with all that. He would probably turn that into a lucrative endeavor. Tyler Durden.
All right. Well, I love that answer. I think it's great. I am going to say, however, I would like to take the greatest sports entertainer of movie history, Apollo Creed, and have him start a wrestling promotion. Think about it. We know that pro wrestling is a very popular thing in the Rocky universe. Take Thunder Lips, for example, aka Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
So he'll be the centerpiece of this new wrestling promotion. We're going to imagine that this wrestling promotion got started around that time, Rocky III, and we're going to veer off from the tragic events of Rocky IV and say that never took place because Apollo Creed instead decided to start his own promotion. And who knows more about promotion than Apollo Creed himself, and he has his own gym as well where he trained Rocky in Rocky III. And so I'm going to say Apollo Creed, with his star power, he is a real human being, and as opposed to Tyler Durden, who is not a real human being. He has hookups in the press. He has hookups to hot, young, athletic talent that he could turn from prospective boxers. Hey, you flame out in boxing, you got an A-plus personality, you're very athletic. Come on down to Apollo Creed's wrestling school, and we'll get you on TV in the territories in 1983. Then he sells his territory to Vince McMahon and makes a big, fat profit. I like Apollo Creed. He's a real human.
Yeah, Apollo Creed is a better answer. Because, all the reasons you said.
I kind of want to see that now. All right, that's it for Mad Chat. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Like we said, check out Count Out tomorrow. We got all sorts of factions in that episode tomorrow. Till then, we'll talk to you guys later.
Sorry, Daryl Takahashi. I botched my answer to your question. Thank you, everybody.
You did great. It's great.